Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Men and Tights podcast. I do sincerely hope that you've had a lovely weekend or having an even better weekend. And as I always say, make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Radio Public, or YouTube, whichever you prefer to listen to this on. And make sure to follow me on Twitter at IamFossilDude for any and all podcast information. And this episode, we'll be sharing my thoughts and predictions for this Sunday's annual WWE event, Hell in a Cell, which, as of right now, I'm recording this immediately after the Fox premiere of SmackDown, and there's still only 3 matches officially announced, so it's going to be a short prediction for that part, at least. But I'm also going to be talking about the season premiere of Monday Night Raw from this Monday, the TNT premiere of AEW Dynamite, as well as, like I just said, Fox's premiere of Friday Night SmackDown. So enough rambling, let's get right into this thing. Alright, Monday Night Raw premiered this Monday with the season premiere, and it was pretty good, not the best. It was, honestly, it was meh. I enjoyed the new theme song, which is Legendary by Skillet. That's a very good song. I do like the band. They are very good. The stage looks great. I did like that, and I'm very happy that we finally got Pyro back on WWE television. That is something very nice. But the show overall was just, I really don't know what they were thinking. It's just, we opened it. It was with a Rey Mysterio. He was going to cut a little promo, but then he got interrupted by Brock Lesnar, and Brock Lesnar just basically killed him. Then he eyeballed his son Dominic and killed him as well, which, honestly, I did enjoy watching that. That was pretty fun. It actually reminded me a lot of, if you guys remember from Backlash 2003, when Big Show had Rey Mysterio strapped to the little gurney and took him and swung him up against the ring post. It reminded me a lot of that. So that part was pretty fun. But then we had Sasha Banks versus Alexa Bliss, which was an okay match, and Becky Lynch did commentary, just basically being, the man, saying, this Sunday, I'm going to put you through hell, kind of stuff. And then we had the Raw Tag Team Championship match, Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode against Heavy Machinery. This one was actually a very good match. I did enjoy this match. For me, it felt very much, like a classic, tag team wrestling match, which I wish we could get more of on WWE TV, but, I'm not holding my breath on that anytime soon. Roode and Ziggler retained, obviously. Although part of me did think at a few points that Heavy Machinery was going to win, but Roode and Ziggler retained. Then we had the Miz TV segment with Hogan and Flair, which, it seemed like they were going to come to blows, but then Hogan was like, no, brother, you and I, we're not spring chickens anymore. And then they announced that they were going to do a Team Flair versus Team Hogan match at the Crown Jewel pay-per-view, which I'm not going to be watching. Not out of any political nonsense, just, I really haven't enjoyed any of the Saudi Arabia shows at all. So I really couldn't care less, but, as soon as they announced that the match, out of nowhere, boom, Hogan already had Seth Rollins as his team captain, and Flair has Randy Orton as his team captain, and then Baron Corbin came out to be part of Flair's team, and then Rusev came out to save Seth, so I guess he's part of the team as well, so that was pretty cool, I guess. And then, because we were supposed to have Mysterio versus Rollins in the main event, Rusev decided, he said, I'm the only one that went out there to save Seth, so he owes me, and then challenged him to the Universal title match that Mysterio was supposed to get. Then we had another Viking Raiders versus OC match, where, OC lost, which just, what was even the point of this match, I don't know. Ricochet and Cesaro, that one was a fun match, and the promo that they had before that, Cesaro was saying that the only crime with Lesnar taking up Rey and Dominic is that he did it before Cesaro can get to them first, which, I got a chuckle out of that. But Ricochet and Cesaro was a fun match. Could have gone a lot longer. I wished it did. And then we had AJ Styles with Cedric Alexander, and this one was fun, but, just what was the point if Cedric wasn't going to win? I don't know. We had Lacey Evans and Natalya, which, I'll be honest, I wasn't barely paying attention to this one, even though I love both women. Lacey Evans won, so I guess the story is done, unless they decided to do another one for this Sunday, but we shall see. And then we had our main event, Rollins against Rusev, which started out very well, but then the thing that everyone else is talking about is that the ending where Bobby Lashley returned, and then Lana showed up and started making out with Bobby Lashley. Why? I have no idea. Nobody knows what happened. Nobody understands that. Nobody understands why they're doing this again, because, you know, this will be the third time that they've tried a, you know, Rusev Lana breakup it kind of story. Because the first time, of course, was, you know, with Ziggler and Summer Rae, and that went nowhere. And then they kind of tried it again with Aiden English, and that didn't go anywhere. And then they're doing it this time. So I guess in their heads, they're thinking third time's the charm, but just, I don't know, something about this is just, I do not like it. I don't. It's stupid. And then the Fiend came out and, you know, attacked Seth. So that saved the ending of the show. But just, I really don't understand what's going on. I really don't. I just don't get it. I really don't. You know, but I mean, Sage looked nice at least. The theme song is good. The pyro is awesome. And I did enjoy the new commentary team, Vic Joseph, Dio Madden, and Jerry Lawler. I think Jerry Lawler is only going to be there like sometimes, but not every week. Which, I mean, that's fine. I mean, he's barely on WWE TV as it is, so I wouldn't even notice. Just for them hyping this up, being the season premiere for Monday Night Raw, just could have been so much better. And hopefully, next week's Raw will be better. And now we come to the highly anticipated TNT premiere of AEW Dynamite. And for its first time, you know, broadcasting on television, it was pretty good. You know, it wasn't great like a lot of people on Twitter are making it out to be. At least to me, it wasn't that great. I mean, the matches weren't bad. I did enjoy Cody versus Sammy Guevara. I did enjoy the quick, you know, squash segment with MJF and whatever that guy's name was. I don't remember, something Cutler. I really loved Adam Page versus Pac. To me, actually, for me, that was my favorite match. I really enjoyed that. I did like the Nyla Rose versus Rio. Wasn't the best, and honestly, I was only half paying attention to it. The last minute and a half was great, but the match overall was just okay. Especially for it being the match to crown the first ever AEW Women's Champion or Women's World Champion. Could have done better, but Rio won, and she's the, you know, AEW's inaugural Women's Champion, so that's cool. And they're going to kick off the tag team tournament next week for the crown the first AEW tag team champions. So that's sure to be fun. A lot of great teams are featured in that one. Lucha Bros, the Dark Order, the Young Bucks, of course. And I think Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy are one of the teams. Jack Evans and Angelico are part of it because they showed up during the show while the Chris Van, whatever his name is, was interviewing Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes sitting at front row ringside, which that was cool that they were there. I'm a big fan of Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes. I love the Jay and Silent Bob movies and the characters and all the movies that they've been part of, and I can't wait to watch Jay and Silent Bob reboot when that comes out later this month, which I had no idea that Chris Jericho was supposed to be in that, so that's cool. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with the tournament at least. And then they had the main event. It was the Elite, Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks taking on Chris Jericho and Santana and Ortiz, which they announced it before the show, or like a couple of days before the show, which I wish they would have kept it as a surprise. But you know, whatever. The match itself was okay, was pretty good, but it was kind of overshadowed by Jon Moxley making an appearance and taking out Kenny Omega, which actually was my favorite segment or favorite moment on the show, when the way they brawled around the arena and then Moxley hit him with the DDT through a glass coffee table in the apparent VIP area that they have there. And the match continued for a few more minutes, and was eventually won by Jericho after he hit one of the Bucks with the Judas effect. And then Cody came out to attack Jericho because Jericho had attacked him at the end of his match with Sammy Guevara. And then Sammy Guevara came out and low-blowed Cody, but then Dustin Rhodes came out, or Dustin Runnels, showed up to avenge his little brother. But then who would make his surprise debut on AEW Dynamite? The former WWE superstar, former US, ECW, and World Heavyweight Champion, formerly known as Jack Swagger, Jake Hager, showed up, and I did have a slight mark out moment for that, because that was cool. I was always a fan of Jack, or Jake, as he's now known, as he even tweeted out hashtag RIP Jack Swagger, and changed his Twitter handle to now it's Real Jake Hager. And that was a good way to close the show. But my issues with what the show was. Like I said, fans are praising it up and down, like it was the greatest thing to happen in the history of pro wrestling. I even saw one person saying that this show was better than anything WWE had done in 18 years, and I'm just thinking, like, okay, cool down your markdom, because it was a good show, but it's not better than everything WWE's done in the last 18 years. I mean, it's like, did you forget the first Raw Roulette show? That was awesome. Did you forget the Madison Square Garden show in 2002 when Triple H made his return? That was an awesome show. I don't know. Sometimes wrestling fans can get a little too ridiculous with that stuff. But anyways, my issues with it, with the show. During the Cody versus Sammy Guevara match, there's a part where Cody's gonna do a suicide dive, and then Sammy pulls Brandi Rhodes in the way, and Cody accidentally hits her, you know, of course. But then Brandi basically no-sells it, because a minute later she's up, hitting Sammy with her shoe, and then Cody gets the win after that, and then he's wanting to shake Sammy's hand. The dude just grabbed your wife and made you hit her, and you want to shake his hand? Like, fuck that. You know, if this was WWE, fans would be ripping into the inconsistency of that. But, you know. But, you know, the fans, they excuse themselves because it's not WWE. And then speaking of that, I touched on earlier with Moxley and Omega brawl during the main event six-man tag. The fact that the match kept on going after Moxley attacked Omega. And when I was talking to my brother about it yesterday, if this had happened on Raw, SmackDown, NXT, Impact, or Ring of Honor, or any other wrestling company, the match would have ended by disqualification immediately. And because AEW, they've been talking about that, you know, wins and losses are going to matter. And again, they had like little win-loss scoreboards next to their names when they came out, which that I do like that part. That part is pretty cool. The match would have ended. And should have been it. But you know, if they really want to present AEW as a real sport, like they've been trying to do, you know, they need to be more consistent with things like that. You know, that's but that's just mine, and again, talking with my brother, that was our gripes with the show. I mean, and also another thing that kind of annoyed me when Cody made his entrance, and then when the Elite made their entrance later on in the show, it's like they had like pay-per-view WrestleMania kind of entrances. It's like I understand they wanted to make a big splash on their, you know, TNT debut, but it's just a TV show. It's not a pay-per-view. You can tone down, you know, the stuff for regular TV. You don't have to try to, you know, be a five star, you know, or, you know, 700 and a quarter star Tokyo Dome show. You know, sometimes it's okay to be just, you know, just regular. You know, but that's all. That's really my gripes with it. But you know, but again, a lot of the fans that I saw on Twitter, they excused all that stuff. They excused all those inconsistencies. And hell, anyways, also the other thing I just remembered, during the women's match, Nyla Rose brought out a bunch of chairs and stacked them on the outside and was gonna slam Rio into them. Again, that would have been a disqualification in any other wrestling promotion, but for AEW, they keep using the excuse, oh, it's referee's discretion. But yeah, but be a little more consistent, you know? But I did enjoy hearing JR and Tony Schiavone on commentary. So, you know, but Tony Schiavone did take me back to the Monday Nitro days. So that was a lot of fun. And Jim Ross, I always enjoy hearing Jim Ross on commentary. I mean, but like I said, overall, I felt the show was pretty good. They did have a segment with SCU where they had, because they were in Washington, D.C., they had them outside of the White House, which that was a pretty cool segment. I did enjoy that. Oh, yeah, and they're featured in the tag team tournament as well, Kazarian and Christopher Daniels. But then right immediately after that, they cut to them being interviewed on the stage. And it's just like, I mean, why are you going to have basically two promos by them, one pre-taped early in the day and then one right there live on the stage? It's, I don't know, they could have, but the way I would have done it is have the pre-taped, you know, White House promo, go to commercial, and then come back with them on the stage. But that's just me. I mean, again, overall, it was good for their premiere episode. I just hope they'll learn and try to do better. You know, I want them to do better. I want great wrestling on my television. That's all I want. Now, Friday Night SmackDown premiering on Fox, and I gotta be honest, I actually enjoyed this. I actually enjoyed SmackDown overall more than I did Raw and even AEW. I know the AEW super smarks are gonna hate me for saying that. Yeah, not that they even listen to this, so whatever. But I just me personally. You know, I know everybody says stories differently, but me personally, I enjoyed Friday Night SmackDown more than I enjoyed Monday Night Raw and AEW Dynamite this week. But that's just me. That's just me. One of the reasons I enjoy it is the new theme song is Are You Ready by AC/DC, and I love AC/DC. They are one of my favorite bands ever. And just getting to hear AC/DC music on a wrestling show again, I absolutely love that. And the stage, the new entrance stage for SmackDown looks great. I absolutely love it. I really love that they're using different and unique stages again for Raw and SmackDown. I missed that uniqueness on Raw and SmackDown because for the last, basically since they introduced the LED, you know, HD stage in 2008, they've been using that for all the Raws and SmackDowns, you know, forever. And when they would change it up, it would still be the same thing, and it got really annoying. And then after a while, the pay-per-views started being the same stages all the time too, and I hated that. So since Raw has their own stage, and then SmackDown has their own, you know, entrance stage, hopefully the pay-per-views will start doing the same as well. And we did have the kickoff. We kicked off the show with Becky Lynch coming out to, you know, be the man, but then she got interrupted by Baron Corbin. Of course, fans hated that. And then The Rock showed up, which, you know, everybody loved. And I'll admit, I'm not a Rock fan, and all of you listening to this already know this, or at least you should know this. However, I will admit that I did mark out just a little bit when he came out during that opening segment with Becky Lynch and Baron Corbin. And I know my brother's gonna have fun with that when he listens to this. But yeah, I really enjoyed that opening segment with, you know, classic catchphrase from The Rock. And then when he did his finally, The Rock has come back, and he was gonna say home, obviously, because, you know, SmackDown, you know, because right up until that point, he talked about how SmackDown, the term SmackDown was invented by him, and you could see he was tearing up a little bit, and it was legitimate tears, and it even hit me a little bit. So yeah, but then, you know, Corbin got his ass kicked by Lynch, got the people's elbow from The Rock. Everyone, you know, loved it. It was awesome. Excuse me. Sorry, I'm a little gassy. y'all didn't want to hear that, but sorry. And then we had our first match on SmackDown on Fox. It was Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair versus Sasha Banks and Bayley. And of course, it was a good match, as always is the case with when these four women wrestle. mean, it didn't really do much to add to the already existing story of Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks, but it was a fun match to kick off their Fox debut for SmackDown. And then Seth Rollins came out because he was going to have a match with Shinsuke Nakamura, but before any of that could go down, it was interrupted by Bray Wyatt and the Firefly Funhouse. And of course, Firefly Funhouse is always a highlight of any show. Bray Wyatt is saying, like, you know, for the first brand new time being on Fox, you know, thought we would introduce, you know, everyone to my friends. And then they showed Abby the Witch, then Mercy the Buzzard, Huskus the Pig, and then Ramblin' Rabbit showed up, which, I mean, he's basically like Kenny on South Park when he used to die every week and he comes back like nothing happened. He came out dressed as Seth Rollins, and that just, and honestly, I laughed pretty hard when he first showed up because he had the beard, had the scraggly hair, and was even wearing a little makeshift Burn It Down t-shirt. And then Bray decided, you know what, that Ramblin' Rabbit would have his own little Hell in a Cell match, where he would be Seth Rollins and Mercy the Buzzard would be, I guess, the played a part of the Fiend. And then Ramblin' Rabbit died for the fourth time, so RIP Ramblin' Rabbit times four. And then the Rollins Nakamura match got started after they came back from the break, and it started out real hot, and fans were in it, I was into it, and it was looking like it was gonna, you know, be my favorite match of the night up to that point. But then the Fiend arrived and took out Seth Rollins on the entranceway, got him with the Mandible Claw, and then he threw Seth off the stage. It wasn't that high of a stage. You know, it's not like, you know, the old Raw's War entrance stage that was like 15 feet off the ground, but still, you know, being dropped from any height can hurt pretty bad. So that was cool. And we also had Erin Andrews from Fox Sports, you know, analyst. She had an interview segment with New Day, which I actually really liked. You know, to me, it was a nice little touch, you know, to add a sense of legitimacy to the show as far as, you know, being seen as a real sports program. So that was cool. And then we had the ladder match with Kevin Owens versus Shane McMahon, and I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun watching. It was a fun, hard-hitting fight with elbow drops through the announce table and frog splashes through ladders, coast to coast with the ladder right into Owen's face, a powerbomb from top of one ladder onto another ladder, and all culminating with Kevin Owens ascending that ladder and grabbing the briefcase, signifying the termination of Shane McMahon per the stipulations of this match. And of course, fans loved that. I loved it. I was so happy. I jumped out of my seat and cheered it on. But the thing is, how long is Shane McMahon going to actually be gone after this? Because we all know when superstars are fired on WWE television, unless it's, you know, part of a real firing backstage that we're not aware of, they usually come back within a few months. So how long will Shane McMahon actually be away? We shall see. Let me take a drink. My throat's getting dry. Ah, good. Then we had a 8-man tag match that I had no idea was happening. It was AJ Styles, Randy Orton, Dolph Ziggler, and Robert Roode taking on The Miz, Heavy Machinery, and Braun Strowman. This was a fun, fast-paced match, and you know, everybody got their moves in, so it was fun. And Strowman and crew won the match. But the real story of this segment was Braun getting in the face of British heavyweight fighter Tyson Fury. So, you know, perhaps they're building towards, you know, a potential WrestleMania match between the two? Who knows? And this would not be the last time that we see a surprise appearance of a fighter getting in the face of a WWE superstar on this show, and I will get to that in a little bit. And then after this, we had a lumberjack match with Roman Reigns and Eric Rowan, which I didn't expect, but hey, I enjoyed it. It was a pretty good, nothing spectacular. It was your standard lumberjack match on WWE television. But it was really just a filler match to kill time before that main event. But I still enjoyed it, though, and Roman Reigns won the match after Luke Harper showed up trying to take out Roman, but then Daniel Bryan got involved and took out Harper, and Rowan tried to take out Bryan, but then Reigns took out Rowan for the 1-2-3, and then Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan shook hands, embracing, and fans roared in approval with their yes chants, and yeah, it was a nice little way to end that segment. And then we finally reached our main event, WWE Champion Kofi Kingston defending against Brock Lesnar, and it all ended in about 5 seconds, because as soon as the bell rang, Kofi ran and Brock took him down with a single F5 to become a 5-time WWE Champion, which honestly surprised me. I thought that they were going to do something based on Brock taking out Mysterio, he was going to interfere to keep, you know, the belt on Kofi so he wouldn't have to lose, and then also keep Brock looking strong so he wouldn't have to lose clean. But no, Brock took out Kofi with a single F5, winning the title for a 5th time, and fans were pissed off. If you looked at Twitter, they were shitting their pants angry, saying, like, I think I saw at least 20 tweets saying, they did Kofi dirty. They did Kofi dirty. Get over it. I mean, he had his moment at WrestleMania, and he'd been champion up until, let me see, he basically was April, May, June, July, August, September. He went six, almost 7 months as champion, basically overpowering everyone that came in his way. Nobody was essentially a serious threat to him in his championship. Randy Orton was the closest that we got to that, but even he didn't do it. So Brock, and also, because Brock is, he has the mainstream appeal because of his, you know, real fighting background in USC, you know, and he has that mainstream appeal to, you know, people for, like, from ESPN and Fox Sports and all that. So putting the belt on him is a good way to get the attention. But then almost immediately as Brock won and was holding that belt in the air, they played Rey Mysterio's music, and out came Rey Mysterio, but he wasn't alone, because he was joined by UFC fighter Cain Velasquez. Fans went insane over that, and we'd been hearing rumors that Cain Velasquez was going to pop up on WWE TV, and here he is. I know he's had his, you know, he'd been training at the Performance Center and had a, you know, some stuff in Mexico as well, but showed up on here, everybody loved it, and brawled with Lesnar, and the fans were red hot for the entire segment, and I cheered too. But for those who might not be aware who are listening to this, Cain Velasquez holds a first round TKO on Lesnar from UFC 121 in 2010, where he dethroned Brock as UFC heavyweight champion. So yeah, there's some legitimate history there. And also where Brock lost that match, that was also where that they had that segment or that moment after the fight where him and Undertaker got into it for a little bit, because they were trying to set up Undertaker versus Lesnar for WrestleMania the following year, which of course that didn't happen yet, and I had to wait a few more years for that. But yeah, that was the fight where he lost the UFC title to Cain Velasquez, and I guess this does confirm the rumors of Lesnar versus Velasquez happening at maybe WrestleMania, you know, if they're willing to wait that long. But who knows, they might book it for a Survivor Series or even Crown Jewel, who knows. Either way, I'm excited for that, because you got two legit badass fighters, you know, that is gonna get a lot of mainstream coverage for WWE. And again, overall, I enjoyed SmackDown a lot more than I enjoyed Raw and AEW this week. But that's just me. Again, that's just me. I know others feel differently, and that's cool. Nothing wrong with how they feel, but that's just how I feel. And then we also got the WWE Draft that's supposed to be starting next Friday, and will conclude the following Monday on Raw. So it should be a fun time, but my only hope is that the rosters will be equal in terms of star power, because usually when they do these drafts, SmackDown gets dicked around and doesn't get enough big names. But since, you know, Fox paid $1 billion to put SmackDown on their show for Fridays, they're going to be expecting to have some big names on their programming, so yeah. But we shall see how that turns out. And And now we have my, I guess what it's gonna be, gonna be a very short segment of Hell in a Cell predictions, because as I said, they are recording this immediately after Friday Night SmackDown, and the only matches they have officially announced are Eric Rowan and Luke Harper versus Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan, Becky Lynch versus Sasha Banks, and Seth Rollins versus The Fiend. So, unless they announce something later on for Saturday and early Sunday, who knows what else they're gonna do for the pay-per-view, so, yeah. But yeah, we have Eric Rowan and Harper versus Reigns and Daniel Bryan. This one, I don't have an official prediction for it because part of me is thinking that that it might be the way the story had been building up for the last 2 months, that there might be they might throw a swerve at us, but hopefully not a Vince Russo swerve, or maybe that Daniel Bryan had been behind all of this the entire time, which. Some people might think that that's stupid because, Rowan and Harper beating up Daniel Bryan for the last few weeks as well, which I can see that, but you never know, because Daniel Bryan he is kind of an evil genius of a character, so he might have manufactured all that to make Roman Reigns look like a fool when they take him out in the end. So who knows? I mean, if they go that route, which I mean, part of me kind of hopes that they do. I would love that. But if they don't and it's just a clean match, then in that case, then my prediction would be Reigns and Daniel Bryan to win. And then we have the Raw Women's Championship Hell in a Cell match, Becky Lynch defending against Sasha Banks. This one, I believe, will end up being match of the night, regardless of what other matches happen on the show. Because, I mean, the match that they had at Clash of Champions, even though the match technically ended about, halfway through it because of the spot where the referee got hit with the chair, was my favorite thing for the entire show. Well, that and the closing segment with The Fiend. But, as far as the matches themselves, that was my favorite match on Clash of Champions. So I'm expecting, that times 10 for this Hell in a Cell match. And I very much look forward to seeing it. And regardless of how the match itself goes, I'm predicting Sasha Banks to win and become the new Raw Women's Champion. But either way, whether she wins or whether Becky retains, I'll be happy either way. And then we'll have, which of course is going to be the main event, Seth Rollins defending the Universal title against The Fiend in another Hell in a Cell match. And this is the one where I'm kind of worried of how it's going to go. Because this will be only the second time the Fiend character has a match on WWE TV. But I'm predicting that he's going to win. Because, if you want to keep The Fiend red hot and protect, the mystique of the character, then you won't have him lose on only his second match. But then again, on WWE's Twitter, where they had a little poll of what you think is gonna the match how the match is gonna end, they had pinfall, submission, and then disqualification. And literally everyone, including myself, reacted as, how can you have a disqualification for a Hell in a Cell match? Doesn't make any sense. But then a lot of us remembered Braun Strowman versus Roman Reigns at Hell in a Cell last year, where it ended in a no contest because Brock Lesnar showed up. So, I mean, who knows how that's gonna go? But I'm really hoping it's not gonna have a BS finish like that. So, I'm predicting and hoping that The Fiend will win and be the new Universal Champion. I hope it will be. Please do not screw this up, WWE. Do not screw this up.
What on earth did we just witness?
And that is going to do it for this edition of the Men Insights podcast. I hope you all enjoyed listening to me and hearing what I had to say on about Raw, AEW, SmackDown, and Hell in a Cell. And if you didn't enjoy it, thanks for tuning in anyway. I appreciate that. And make sure you tune in to next week's podcast, so as I'll be talking about the results of Hell in a Cell, as well as the fallout on Raw and on SmackDown. And I might do another recap of AEW for the at least as far as the tag team tournament goes, and whatever else that's interesting enough for me to talk about on that one. So, make sure you check out that, And also, please check out my retro film reviews. I'm actually going to have another one coming up this week since at the new Addams Family movie's coming out next Friday. I'll be doing a double retro film review for Addams Family and Addams Family Values, all on one little podcast segment. So I hope you'll check that one out and enjoy it. And also, please check out my past editions of retro film review for The Lion King, Masters of the Universe, and Adventures of Baron Munchausen. My worst to best segment. Justin premiered the worst to best of Batman last weekend. If you haven't checked out my Spider-Man one, check that one out. Check out both of them. I would love it very much. And also check out the premiere edition of Classic Wrestling pay-per-views that I had earlier this week, where I reviewed the 1997 Bad Blood in Your House pay-per-view, where they had the first ever Hell in a Cell match, as well as the debut of Kane. Check that one out. I hope you'll enjoy it. And as always, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Radio Public, or YouTube, and follow me on Twitter at IamFozitude for all podcast updates, and follow me on Instagram at Fozitude to enjoy what I post on there, and on Vero at Fozitude as well. And please support the podcast by donating on Patreon if you would like to improve the overall quality of my brand for the Minutites podcast. Make a contribution to my Hall of Justice. It's only $5 a month to contribute, and you can basically do whatever you want with it after that. You can submit, podcast ideas, and hell, you can even, collaborate with me on a future episode. We can work all that out if you're interested. The link to the Patreon, it'll be in the description below, and also please check out the Mennonites Podcast store. I have plenty of shirts, stickers, wall art, and all of that is in the description as well. I have several options of shirts for you guys to enjoy, including, the regular, plain podcast logo, and then I have the podcast thumbnail on there as well, and I have one where it's hashtag Mennonites Podcast, and like alternate color variations of the logo, one where it's just plain, Mennonites Podcast written in the Justice League movie font, Funko-ized version of myself wearing a Mennonites shirt, and the newest one that it's actually probably my favorite one that I've done so far, I'm Just a Nerdy Kid from Queens with the Spider-Man face, and of course that quote is from Spider-Man 3, that Peter says that to Mary Jane while they're on dinner. Please buy one of those shirts. I would love you very much, love you forever. But one last thing, before I close this podcast, I wanted to mention this. A good friend of the podcast, John Garza, he started a GoFundMe campaign for his daughter. And she wants to become a film director. And, she does, like little small videos with like stop motion with her, with like little action figures and stuff. And she's wanting to do a new one. And I'll have the link to this GoFundMe in the description. It's called the Birthday Wish, and read the little what's written on here from the official page for it as well. It says, hello, my name is John Garza, and he has a video that's on there talking about it from his YouTube channel. It says, this video is to help you better understand what exactly Avery and I are looking to create. If you follow me on YouTube, on my YouTube channel, you know I love creating interesting trailers and videos from the film industry. You might also know that I'm a massive Zack Snyder fan and have watched his films numerous amounts of times. And like everything in my life, I have studied and grown to learn many things from his visual style, as well as from some of my other favorite directors. So naturally, my daughter, Avery, became interested in a lot of the films I watched and became a sponge of knowledge about them. She started noticing visual cues that some directors would have and really understood the cinema language being presented to her. In her learnings, she became very interested in her own project, in making her own projects. So, she started making stop motion with anything she could find. She even made a recreation of the Batman vs. Superman car chase, and instead of Superman, she used her Indoraptor from Fallen Kingdom, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, that is. But what if a child aspired to something greater? That was when Avery spoke to me about wanting to be a director. And from that conversation sprung a story that she wanted to tell, The Birthday Wish. Without giving too much away, it's a short film about a child that, without imagination, won't win the battle she's in. It's Fox Force Toy Story, co-directed by Quentin Tarantino and Zack Snyder. We already have the concept and storyboards, along with the practicality of how to make her film in a reality. She just needs a little more help in the equipment and post-production side of things. And with your donations, not only will you be supporting Avery in a quest to be a unique filmmaker, but you'll also be a part of the journey with each step of the process. Depending on the type of donations, you'll be updated weekly on the process to completion. Get exclusive promotional material, be shown early concept ideas, gain exclusive B-roll footage, obtain executive producer credit, get early access to some rough cuts, and even have the ability to see the film before anyone else when it's finished. And of course, that's what we've thought of now, and may surprise some of the people that donate with even more exclusive content. And as a bonus, if you donate multiple times, your final donation total will unlock the next tier level as if you donated the whole amount. Lastly, every donor will be up to date with all the festivals we submit her short to, so if it's being shown in your city, you'll know you helped get her there. After the festivals, I'll be debuting her short film on my YouTube channel. The reason I won't publish it when it's finished is that some festivals have strict policies on films only being presented exclusively for their festivals if they select our film. That's why, depending on the donation level, the perks may even grant you first viewings before anyone else. Avery's aspirations are grand, and I believe, with my skills in audio production and video editing, and her eye for visual and storytelling, this adventure will bring our bond even closer than it already is. Together, we're creating something rare that I'm confident will be a monumental achievement for a child director. The plan is to shoot her film in about 6 days, with post-production taking the bulk of the time to finalize. With your help and support, you'll be helping Avery create her film the way she envisioned it, and will get her the necessary technology to make it possible. So no matter the pledge you give, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts for the support from each and every one of you. We can't wait to debut her short film with the world. And then they have the tiers listed on here. The $1 is weekly updates, $10 is weekly updates plus exclusive promotion material, $25 is the first two, plus early concept ideas and musical tracks composed by myself, as well as inspirations. $50 is all of that, plus exclusive B-roll footage, and the first to view the teaser trailer for The Birthday of Witch when available. $100 plus is this all of that, plus executive producer credit, and a thank you gift card for the film from me and Avery. $500 gets you all that, plus an early access to rough cuts, and then $1,000 is all of that, plus first access to the final film, plus any alternate cut created. And of course, you can donate any one of those amounts, or you can just donate whatever you feel comfortable donating with. Again, I will have the link for this in the description, and please, contribute whatever you can, because the future of a bright young, child living her dream. For all we know, she could be the next Martin Scorsese or the next Zack Snyder or even the next Sofia Coppola, because she's a great director as well, or the next Patty Jenkins. Who knows? And your donation will help make that possible. So again, link will be in the description. Donate to that, if you can, and whatever amount that you can. And as always, thank you all again for tuning in to this episode of the Minute Tights Podcast, and for subscribing to the podcast as well. I love and appreciate every single one of you who do. I really, truly, genuinely do, and I hope you all are enjoying your weekend, and that you spend it with your loved ones if you can, and if you're working, hope you don't have a miserable time at work. This has been the Minute Tights Podcast. I am Julian, and I will see you all next time. Bye.